Coming to you live from my hotel room, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's America's least valuable export, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast Recap Edition. Going to be talking with the winner of Millennials versus Gen X, Adam Klein, coming up here in just a little bit. Looking forward to getting into everything with him. Of course, he played with Zeke and Michaela, our most recent Survivor winner. So a lot to get into with Adam. And I am still here on the road, this whirlwind trip. Got a chance to do the Survivor know-it-alls with Stephen Fishback. Met so many great Canadian fans and a lot of U.S. fans that came up here to see us here in Toronto. It's been a lot of fun. Everybody was so appreciative that we came up here. I was really overwhelmed by all the enthusiasm for these crazy podcasts. So thanks to everybody who came out to those shows, and hope you guys appreciated the live shows that we did, audio and video, up on robhasawebsite.com. I also had a chance to visit the set of Big Brother Canada and spoke with Arissa Cox and the executive producer of Big Brother Canada, Aaron Brock. That is also up in the wrap-ups feed on robhasawebsite.com, as well as my exit interview with the fan favorite, the sheriff, Ciara Dawn Thomas. All those shows are up on the podcast feed, robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. Before we get to my conversation with Adam, let me take a moment and thank a sponsor, and those are our friends over at Movement Watches. Movement Watches were founded on the belief that style shouldn't break the bank, which I think is I think we're all on the same page with that. The watchmaker's goal is to change the way consumers think about fashion by offering high quality, minimalist products. I've been wearing my Movement watch on the road, had to change it from LA time to Toronto time. Not a problem. As easy as could be. Now, Movement Watches was started by a couple of guys who wanted nice watches and couldn't afford them, and they wanted to reinvent the watch game. Watch game changers. And they decided to start their own watch company. Movement Watches started just $95 at a department store. You could be paying $400 to $500. And that's US dollars, okay? That's not Canadian money. Movement figured out that by selling online, they were able to cut out the middleman, just like they do on Survivor, just like they cut out Ciara Dawn Thomas, and they retail markup, and not like Mark the Human, and they provide the best possible price with a classic design, quality construction, and stylized minimalism. Over 1 million Movement watches have been sold in over 160 countries. So get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to movementwatches.com/RHAP. The watches have a clean design. Even my wife thinks my Movement watch is nice, and she hates everything that I have. So now's the time to step up your watch game. Go to movementwatches.com/RHAP again for 15% off with free shipping and free returns. Movementwatches.com. That's MVMTWatches.com/RHAP. Join the movement. All right, everybody. I'm very excited to welcome this guest back to the podcast. Of course, in addition to being a Survivor super duper fan, he's also your reigning Survivor champion. Please welcome back to the podcast the great Adam Klein, champ. How are you?
I'm good, Rob. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yes, Adam, the days are drawing nigh of when you can say that you are the reigning Survivor champ. What are you planning on doing over these next 13 days?
I'm gonna run across country and back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's I just decided just now.
Are people gonna follow you like Forrest Gump?
That's the plan. Hey, if you see me running in the street, just jump in behind me.
Against the wind. Yeah, that'll be you. You can grow your hair out long for the next 13 days.
I know. You know, I hadn't thought about it that I only have like 13 days left of being the reigning champ.
Sorry, I don't mean to be a bummer.
Yeah.
Bummer.
Dang.
Yeah. So, but anyway, Adam, very nice to catch up with you. Of course, that people saw you most recently on Beyond the Buff. How was that?
That was fun. You know, I was actually originally scheduled to be on a different episode. They bumped me. Then we did, something where I did it from home. So they sent me all the stuff. So I set up a little studio in my basement.
I wondered how they did that.
It was fun.
Yeah. Okay. And how's everything else going for you?
Good. I'm actually, I just got back from New York City. I was doing like a satellite media tour there for the American Lung Association. We're doing I was promoting the Lung Force Initiative, which is about lung cancer in women. And it started because only 2% of women have lung cancer on their health radar, and yet it kills more men and more women every year than the next top three cancer killers combined. And people just don't realize that. So we're trying to raise awareness. We're trying to raise money. And actually, a few Survivor fans have tweeted me about this already. But from now until May 27th, if you go into a CVS pharmacy location, you'll hear my voice about every 30 minutes telling you to donate a checkout to the American Lung Association.
Wow.
So you can go there and make a donation.
Yeah. Well, again, it's so admirable how you've used your platform with Survivor to for such a great cause. And there's a lot of young people who have won the game who have not been able to do anything near like what you've been able to do. So again, congratulations on that.
Well, I grew up with the likes of, Ethan on my television screen. So there have been some very shining examples of, what you are able to do with the fleeting visibility that you get from winning a reality television show.
Yeah. Well, again, great work with everything. And I've really been interested to get your take on everything going on this season. There's so many, interesting parallels between millennials versus Gen X and this season. So it's great to get your take on everything. First of all, are you enjoying this season?
I love it. Yeah, I think it's been a lot of fun to watch. And I agree. You're right. Like the parallels, especially in this episode with the loved ones visit, there were so many emotions that sort of washed over me watching that again, because it also was in like the exact same spot where we did that challenge. They even had the frickin' log that I got stuck underneath again.
Yeah.
It's like almost too many parallels.
Yeah. Well, I guess then why don't we start there? And of course, the loved ones visit was very powerful for you in your season. Could you just sort of explain a little bit to people that who have never played the game, just the emotions you go through with the loved ones visit?
Yeah. I mean, I have a different perception of the loved ones visit than most people who have played the game, because it was so incredibly important for me to not just see my brother or my dad. I actually did not know who was going to be coming out, but to get information from them about what was going on at home. So there was some desperation there, like I needed that love, and I needed that information. And it's one of those things that for me will be one of my greatest takeaways, or maybe my greatest takeaway from being on Survivor, was having my brother out there. Because when we were really young, we were like best friends and worst enemies, just like every pair of brothers is. But then there was a time when like he was in high school especially, but we did not have the closest relationship, and we didn't really talk for a while. And that went on for a number of years, and it was always something that bothered me, but it bothered my parents and my mom even more. And it was like one of those things that my mom always wanted her sons to be close. I mean, as a mom, that's just what, you can't stand to see your kids, not really be good friends. And actually, right before my mom was diagnosed, I decided I wanted to travel to Southeast Asia. I took some time off work. I went to Southeast Asia. I actually went to Cambodia while they were filming Second Chances. And my brother independently decided the same thing. And we're like, well, we're both going. Like, should we travel together? And we ended up traveling together for a month, which brought us closer together than we had ever been. He broke his leg on the he broke his foot while on the trip. And I, like, carried him home at one point. And so we bonded in a way that we hadn't in, you know, over a decade. And then right when we got home from that trip, my mom was diagnosed with lung cancer. So there was this like progression of our relationship that when my brother came out for the loved ones visit, it was not just the culmination of, you know, this survivor journey for us, but also the perfect way to cement our renewed lifelong brotherly bond. Mm-hmm. And it was something that needed to happen to give my mom some peace. And so he was able to come home from that and tell my mom how that went. And it's just the way he hugged me when he came out that day is something that I will never, ever, ever forget. And it's something that I will be eternally grateful for the rest of my life.
I want to ask you about how the players select one another. And of course, last season that you were one of the picks of Jay. And there was that great moment where, you know, he talked about how you guys don't get along, but, you know, that you guys have this relationship and he ended up taking you and you could get that conversation with your brother. We saw a lot of discussion of who got picked and who didn't get picked in the episode. And I've seen it sort of talked about that, you know, this is one part of the game. This isn't strategy when it comes down to the loved ones visit. It's not, people aren't thinking about the game when it comes down to this. Do you agree with that?
It totally depends on who's picking. I mean, some people never turn off and are always thinking about the game. And there is an element of strategy to everything, like, you know, but a lot of times those things can go hand in hand, like doing the right thing for how you feel as a human being is also typically like the right thing in the game of Survivor as well. Like if you see, you know, Suri and you think that she really needs this loved one's visit, you're going to be tempted to pick her as a human being. Mm-hmm. And probably going to be tempted to pick her as a Survivor player as well, because if you can give someone something that they so desperately want or desperately need, you're going to be currying some favor with them as well. So I don't think it's that often that those ideas conflict with each other, but maybe you can think of some examples where they do.
It's just a really hard spot to put people in, because yeah, you probably have people where if they didn't get to see their loved ones, like you know, somebody, even putting myself into that situation of being, you know, I missed my parents, and if I didn't get a chance to see my mom, I, you know, would have been certainly disappointed. But if I had like an ally who sort of explained it, like, look, I need to do this for that reason, like, I think that maybe I could have wrapped my head around it. Although sometimes I could be very petty, Adam, so maybe not. But for like, Andrea has been criticized of like, well, Suri is an ally. You know, you could have, you know, kept Michaela happy and left Suri. I do feel like it's kind of like the ultimate betrayal for if you're somebody who is desperately waiting for that loved one's visit and then to deny them of it when it was your friend that had the chance to take them. It really is an incredibly tough spot to put a person in.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you're always bound to get yourself in trouble. I mean, I think to go back to your first question of like, what does the loved ones visit mean for a Survivor player? The rational Survivor player does not win that challenge. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And yet every single season, have we ever seen anyone throw that challenge?
If they have, we don't know who they were because they just didn't do well in it.
Have we ever heard someone admit to throwing that challenge?
No,
never.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because everyone wants that reward so badly.
Yeah, You know, it does. It is crazy when this the idea of that is thrown out there in the Amazon. Like there was the challenge involved, like getting into boats, and the boats we had sunk, and like Jenna Maraska and Christy like swam across this lake, and the whole time we were there, they tell us whatever you do, don't go in the water, don't go in the water. There's piranhas, there's crocodiles, there's a million things that'll kill you. People just got in the water and tried to swim across something that that we were told, like it was like ingrained, like do not go in the water, you'll die. And you know, people were willing to do that just to get to the loved ones' visit. To go back to Andrea though, and some of the comments that she made, that she talked about how Michaela, she thought she would be hot and then she would get over it after, you know, a day or two. We didn't really get to see Andrea sort of try to mend fences with Michaela. I think we can presume that it did happen. Michaela ultimately ends up voting on the same side as Andrea. But I was surprised that that came from Andrea, considering how the loved ones visit ended up going the last time she played in Caramoan, where we ended up having Dawn be so upset with Brenda that she didn't get her loved one's visit, that was her ally. Brenda found her teeth, and then Dawn wanted to vote her out of the game after that. I thought that was surprising that Andrea thought that Michaela would just be able to have it blow over, which ultimately it did.
Well, let's remember with Michaela, in her very first tribal council ever, she had the option of voting out Figgy, who she despised, and she went with what she saw as the more rational decision, the gameplay decision, to stick with her for a vote and vote out Mari. So Michaela is definitely capable of putting those things aside, even though it may not look at like that when she's so angry about missing out on this crucial loved ones visit. But sure enough, you know, they end up voting together. So Andrea wasn't totally wrong.
Yeah. Let's talk about Michaela, because I am very interested to get your take. Obviously, you started the game with her on the Millennials tribe. What have you thought about Michaela 2.0?
I think Michaela sort of came into the game without obviously any connections. Most of these people probably have, if not pregame alliances, that they've at least discussed with the other people, like, you know, looking forward to seeing you out there. They've probably met at some reality events or something like that. Right from the very beginning, she's got an uphill battle in terms of building connections with these people. And I'm not sure that she, you know, got necessarily the chance to like get in good with people at the beginning, and I think that's sort of still playing out. Just the fact that she was on a different starting tribe from all of these people, they had their opportunities to connect with each other before the game on Nuku, on their original beach, and Michaela missed out on a lot of that. So that could be the source of, you know, why she's not able to sort of get in good socially with some of these people.
Do you see something different about the way she's playing in this season versus what you lived with back in Millennials versus Gen X?
You know, Michaela plays differently when she's on the bottom and when she is in power. And so something that you guys didn't see in the first few days of the Millennial Beach on last season was that Michaela was quickly sort of singled out by Figgy, if I'm remembering correctly, as like the first one to go. And Figgy in the first few days was running the show. Like people were she was talking to everyone. She was sort of telling people what was going to happen. And so you don't want to be the first person to go against that. So she's like, okay, Michaela is going to be the first one to go. I never really understood why that was. And I talked about it at confessional, like, here we go again. The one black woman on our tribe is being targeted first for no apparent reason. And so that didn't really sit well with me necessarily, but I wasn't going to put my neck out on the line. And so Michaela was not in good spirits those first few days. I think she recognized that she wasn't in a position of power or control, and she let that affect her, that she let that affect the way that she responded to other people, I think. So she was, you know, also the weather was terrible, right? This was when we had that cyclone and everything. So right. She was not in a great mood. And I think the evacuation helped her regain footing within our tribe in a significant way, because for the first time, we took sort of the stress away a little bit, and we weren't allowed to talk about the game. We weren't allowed to talk about our personal stories or anything like that. But, you know, we talked about like TV and celebrities and like sort of, it was like an adult sleepover, right?
Wow.
not like that, Rob.
Is that how Figgy and Taylor got started?
Maybe. I don't know. I was trying to get some shut eye.
Okay.
you know, we got to see sort of for the first time the fun side of Michaela. And then after that, you know, the power shifted. Figgy became the first target. Obviously, that switched later on. But Michaela sort of got to find her footing a little bit. And then when she was in power, she was far more pleasant to be around, had a much better attitude about things in general. And so, you know, she has a harder time playing from the bottom because she, doesn't really check her emotions, or at least she didn't necessarily at the beginning of when she first started playing Survivor.
Yeah, because it did seem like back in your season, the time that I thought that she was the best all around was during that time at Ikebula when she was sort of like in a bit of a leadership role. And, you know, there was so much talk about, okay, she's calling the shots, she's making all these plays, and then ultimately got targeted for that. But here in this season, I think that, you know, she's really struggled to find her footing. And then to me, again, from an outside perspective, she just seems to be going by emotion between who she's mad at and what direction she wants to go into. Do you see it the same way, or do you have a different read on that?
Well, it does appear that way, but who did she vote out tonight?
Yeah. But that you could argue that did she then get more mad at Sierra Dawn Thomas that she had an advantage?
I see what you're saying. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can't get into the mind of Michaela.
Like, is she flexible or is she just sort of without direction in the game?
Well, I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive. I do think she's flexible, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
She is definitely willing to hear people out and change her plans accordingly. I think the Figgy, the switching from Figgy to Mari is a perfect example of that. You know, her emotions would have dictated voting out Figgy, but her game, the gameplay player in her, voted out Mari. So she may express her emotions in a really sort of public way, a way that people can notice, but she is thinking like a Survivor player, and I think her moves this season reflect that.
Were you surprised when she was so upset that Zeke got voted off last week?
I wasn't sure when I saw that. I was like, you know, did she vote for him or did she not vote for him? I guess Zeke was the only person that she knew coming into this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can understand why that would be, why that would be emotional, but you know, she and Sarah had the ability to decide who went home that night. So it's not totally fair to lay the criticism for voting out one of their own solely on Andrea and Suri and Aubrey, because you know, they had the swing votes there.
Do you think that bond with Suri is still strong, that we saw at the merge that there was a lot of talking and they were discussing a final three? But I think that really since that point in time, we haven't seen too many strategic conversations between Suri and Michaela. And it looks like that, at least from Michaela's point of view, that she's making plans without Suri of advancing in the game.
Yeah, I mean, she made those plans, but she didn't act on them. So I'm not sure moving forward if those doors are still open. Obviously, it is with Ty because Ty voted with them. But, you know, who else was in the water there? Troyzan, right?
Yeah.
I guess. And then Sierra's gone. So I guess that you know, that deal sort of went out when she voted out one of the people in it. But I'll be curious to see what it is that Ty and Suri are talking about. Obviously, Ty's suggesting something that in the preview for the next episode, I mean, Ty's suggesting something to Suri that she doesn't really want to do, but maybe feels like she has to do. My first thought was, oh, are they talking about Michaela? But then I was like, well, Ty is close to Michaela, too. So why would Ty want to get rid of Michaela? That doesn't seem to make sense.
Yeah. We'll see. We could definitely speculate on what's to come. Let me ask you about the legacy advantage and how that ultimately played out, because back in Millennials versus Gen X, that you had the power to steal a reward from someone. And I don't know if it was exactly the same thing, but to try to build a bond with Taylor, you ended up telling him about an advantage that you had that nobody else knew. So sort of like the idea to build a bond with somebody, you talked about the power of an advantage. Now, obviously, it ends up being much more disastrous for Sierra Dawn Thomas, as we saw Sarah say, you know what, I want that advantage. And she ends up conspiring to get her out of the game. But did you think that that was similar at all to what you went through with Taylor?
Not until you just said it just now. I hadn't really made that connection at all. I guess the impetus there is similar, right? The idea that you want to bring someone closer to you who might be in sort of a swing position.
Right.
That was certainly the idea with Taylor. But I think the main difference, and I think it's a big one, is that I considered my advantage to not be game related. Obviously, everything's game related when you're playing because emotions are connected to the game, but not related to the strategy of the game. And that even if he sort of told people about that or tried to do something with it, that it wouldn't necessarily ruin my game. So it was a risk that I was willing to take. But this is inherently a strategic game thing. And, you know, I think you talked to Sierra already. I'm sure she regrets telling Sarah.
She did.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's, I get why she would do it with Sarah, because she's maybe someone that she feels like she needs to solidify onto her side. But she obviously could have made it clearer that, you know, by the way, Sarah, if you're involved in voting me out, obviously this isn't going to you. But I'm sure she thought that way, even if she didn't say it.
Yeah.
I'm sure she wouldn't have wanted to give it to Sarah if she thought that Sarah voted her out. And so this is amazing to me that Sarah was actually able to vote for Sierra, and Sierra still gave the advantage. That she didn't realize that Sarah had voted her out. That's
so
amazing.
It really is amazing. And in Sierra's interview with me, she talked about how one of the things that Sarah did so well was that she really sold the fake out, where Sarah acted like, oh my God, like she, because I noted, like, why is Sarah having such a big reaction to this? Why is she like staring at Andrea and giving Andrea like a weird look? I didn't really understand that. And Sierra says she saw Sarah react that way, and she saw Brad really have no reaction. She assumed Brad flipped against her.
Right. Yeah, no, Sarah did a really good job of looking confused and like what just happened at Tribal Council.
Yeah.
And I'm just amazed that it worked. But what my takeaway from this, and I said this in my power rankings last week with Gordon Holmes.
Yeah.
Power rankings. I said, Sarah has got to be playing one of the best social games in the history of Survivor, because she has she's the flipper of the season. I mean, she has literally flipped on every single person in the game, and even more so tonight or last night, people are trusting her. Sierra still trusted her with this information, even though she flipped on their whole alliance. You know, she flipped on the alliance she's currently with when she voted out Ozzy. She then flipped back to vote out Debbie. She flipped on her closest ally in the game, Zeke. And now she flipped on another one of her close allies who just told her about this secret in the game and was the only one she told about. And yet people still want to work with her. And that it can only be indicative of her social game.
Now, Adam, this is what I want to get into with you, because as a winner and as a winner in this era, I'm really interested to get your take on the fact Sarah has played this game, as you outline. And to me, I think that there's a lot of things that are reminiscent from Tony. I do think that watching how Tony won in Kageyan has affected the way that she's played here in this game. But I feel like that the game that Jeremy played, the game that Michelle played, and the game that you played, I feel like that there was all an emphasis on people really trusted that person. And at the end of the game, they didn't really feel that burned by that person. But Sarah, I'm wondering, can she win? Is this a winnable game in this era? Or are people going to be mostly upset with her at the Final Tribal Council if she can make it?
Well, one of the things that happened at the Final Tribal Council for Kagayan was Trish came up and said, Tony, you know, you wouldn't be there if it wasn't for me. I was putting out all of your fires, right? And there were fires. Every time Tony made one of those moves, there was blowback. And between, you know, Trish sort of talking to the other allies and then Tony himself, they were able to smooth those things out. But Sarah doesn't have a Trish necessarily that's doing that for her.
She's been her own Trish.
She's been her own Trish.
Yeah.
She is putting out her own fires. And it's sort of unfathomable. Like, you know, how is she able to get these people to continue to not only trust her, but want to work with her down the line when she has shown time and time again that she is willing to turn on anybody?
No, she's been absolutely incredibly interesting to watch. I'm just concerned, though, about that this jury, like with a Sierra Dawn Thomas who gets duped by Sarah. And then on top of that, to add insult to injury, she then gifts the legacy advantage to the very person who was sort of leading the charge to get her out. And yes, at this moment in time, she walks away with the legacy advantage, but eventually somebody's walking into that Ponderosa. You don't know anything about Ponderosa, Adam, but people talk there. Yes. And I'm really wondering, with all these people that she has flipped against, I mean, do they unite and say, kudos, you know, we got, you played the best game, Sarah, or do they walk and is it like a scorched earth and they really just give her sort of like a Russell Hantz treatment in the Final Tribal Council?
I think it depends on the person. Obviously, Debbie, when she got out, she was pissed off and she still even, you know, seemed pissed off in like her exit press and things like that. But then I was thinking about I immediately went to go watch Ponderosa, the Ponderosa video last night, because I wanted to see Zeke's in particular reaction to Sierra saying that she gave the advantage to Sarah. You've got to figure that Zeke knew immediately that Sarah was a part of that vote. And so then Sierra's like, I gave it to Sarah. And Zeke says, really?
Yeah.
So, you know, from the other jury members' perspective, when something like that happens, you almost have to laugh and be like, okay, like, wow, that's something. Like, you can vote someone out and then still get them to give you this advantage in the game.
Yeah, Zeke was also funny when Sierra mentioned that I had this thing called the legacy advantage. And Zeke said, I'm familiar with it.
Yeah. Oh, but which reminds me, this is something that I was thinking about when I was watching last night, when Sarah told Michaela about the legacy advantage, I wondered, is Michaela familiar with the legacy advantage? She should be.
I didn't think she was.
Well, she was on a season where, you know, it played. She got out before the merge, so she didn't see it in action. And she also didn't, you know, she didn't call me, or she might have called some people, but she definitely didn't call me before she went out to talk about how the rest of the game went, or if I had any advice for her going back or anything like that, or just to, you know, sort of talk things out. I certainly would have told her about the legacy advantage and to be on the lookout for something like that potentially. Yeah. But I, you know, so now she's heard about it. I'm wondering, does she know how it works in that it is passed off to somebody else? If she does, then she has to have some idea of where it might have fallen.
I get the sense that she didn't know about it because she didn't mention anything about it. Like, well, who do you think she's going to give it to? She doesn't try to suck up to Sierra. I just wonder if she did talk to somebody from your season. I'm not sure necessarily who it would be that might have given her the rundown when she gets back from the pre-jury trip of like, hey, how did everything work out? If somebody did, you know, it just was so uneventful how it was played. I could totally see that being left out. If somebody was going to tell somebody the story of Millennials versus Gen X, I could see a lot of people forgetting the part like, oh, and then at Final Six, Ken played the legacy advantage.
Right.
It's like, the what? Yeah, he was fine. Nobody was voting for him in the tribal council.
When he played that, I was like, the what? What is happening here?
Yeah, but I just thought that Sarah should have told Michaela it was called something different because, yeah, why is it called the legacy advantage? What does that mean?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm up again, but I was curious if she knew.
Yeah, Adam, I like that they give like a almost like a legal size piece of paper for all the different names that are going to get crossed off on the legacy advantage. I like that so far in two seasons of legacy advantage, the record for people holding the legacy advantage is 2, but we're ready for if like 14 people have the legacy advantage in one season.
It is interesting, like, Jessica went out at around the same time that Sierra did as well. So,
yeah. So what do you think? You think there's a jinx to having legacy advantage?
Well, if it happened at 10 and if it happened in a rock draw, I would say definitely.
Okay. So that's like the jury curse thing.
Yeah. Is that still?
No, I don't think so. I don't, we have to really go through. I do not think that you can find a way to make Sierra Dawn Thomas the fifth juror.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's necessarily the case. What do you think about Sierra Dawn Thomas? I know that there was, you know, so many people. Why is she here? Fan favorite Sierra Dawn Thomas. How do you feel like that she ultimately ended up doing with her second chance?
You know, I think so. I said this as well in my like sort of pregame power ranking thing about Sierra. I was like, most people are going to think, oh, Sierra played like a pretty loyal game last time. You know, she's someone who is probably going to be a solid ally. But if I were going into the game with Sierra Dawn Thomas after her last time out, I would be afraid of her because she knew going into this game that the reason she lost in Worlds Apart was because she stuck to an alliance that she shouldn't have. Right, that she was on not in a power position on, and she had opportunities to flip, and she did not. So, if I'm in Sierra's brain and I'm going into this new season, I'm thinking, okay, that didn't work for me. I have to switch things up. I have to, you know, be willing to like to cut some people. You know, I think if she had been in power over the last few votes, we would have seen more of that. I think you saw a little bit of it in her willingness to turn on, you know, the other people in the minority. Is like, look, my vote's for sale. Just tell me what to do and I'll vote your way. You know, she came to play this time. She took strategic control at times. And she, you know, she potentially could have had an argument if she got to the end. I have thought that it was interesting that in the way that they've at least edited her, I don't know if this is reflective of the way she actually was out there, but they sure show her saying a lot how hard it is, how hungry yeah. she is. How tired she is, how whatever she is. And it's like you wonder if those sorts of things are sort of grating on people if she were, in fact, to make it to the end.
Yeah, that's interesting to me because it seems like that this is a season where you touched on the weather in Millennials versus Gen X that has it been raining once that we've seen so far on this season? It doesn't seem like that's been that big of an issue this mm-hmm. season. And I asked her in the exit interview if this season was harder than Worlds Apart. She said that it was, but I really couldn't identify what it was other than maybe did they just have less food to go around this season?
Well, yeah, do they? I don't think I've seen rice on this season. Have they had rice?
It seems like I wonder if Survivor is just saying, okay, we're not going to give them any food, but there's going to be a lot of rewards, like a lot of like big group rewards. So almost yeah. every reward you have a 50% chance to eat.
And I did hear her say, I don't know if it was in an exit interview or in her Ponderosa, that she wasn't eating the coconut. And so she was significantly hungrier than everybody else if she wasn't eating coconut. But you got to eat coconut. I mean, I think she said maybe it was making her sick. But I mean, that is sustenance out there. Like we had rice on our season, so we had a little bit of rice each day. But mainly, your diet is coconut. So if you're not eating coconut, then yeah, I guess I don't know what you're eating out there. But it sure seemed like she was, at least according to the edit, that she was talking about that stuff quite a bit.
Yeah. And she was somebody who ended up becoming a big target. Her name was really thrown about after the merge. And, you know, for somebody that she came on to the season, and again, I was, you know, as hard on her as anybody. But, you know, she was a factor. I mean, she was one of the people that was, you know, mentioned. She had a pretty good amount of screen time in the episode. And I feel like that was she Kelly Wentworth 2.0? No, not by any stretch of the imagination. But she came out here and she was fine.
She should be very proud of the game that she played here. She didn't get as far, you know, as she did in Worlds Apart, but she was a pivotal part of the season, and she was recognized as the one that was in control of her alliance at the merge. And so that, you know, that's something that you can walk away from your Survivor experience. Whether you win or you lose, you know, you want to feel like you made a difference in your season, like you had some semblance of power at some point, and she certainly did.
Okay. Adam, I know that you are as big of a Suri fan as anybody that's out there. I am finding that the fan base, even I said last night during the know-it-alls, I asked a question like, is it possible? Are we overrating Suri? The audience booed and hissed. You can't say anything. You can't say anything. Even like a hypothetical like question about are we putting Suri too much? And again, I've called Suri. I called her the best player to never win before even this season, and she's only improved her resume. But I just wonder, if Suri doesn't win this thing, are the fans going to be okay?
I don't know. I we got a lot of people hanging their hat on Suri at this point. Look,
I'm worried that we're going to get like whatever like the Survivor Facebook pages version of like when Joey Amazing gets voted out. That's what I'm worried is going to happen on Twitter and Reddit.
Yeah, except but to me, she has already far surpassed my expectations of what would happen to someone who came into the game with her threat level this season. When I did my like winner rankings of who was the most likely to least likely to win, I don't remember exactly where I put her, but she was definitely in the bottom half because she came into this as with that title potentially of like maybe one of the best to never win. There's also, of course, you, Rob Cesternino. You got to throw that.
But just to be fair, that, you know, I was right there one time. But I mean, this is going to be three times that Suri is right there. And again, she could still win this season. But if she comes up short, I mean, that's really, really impressive to do.
And can we talk about the chance that actually I'm starting to think that there is a chance that Suri can win this season? I mean, this would go down. This would make this season one of the best.
Okay, if Suri wins the season, is there a debate between greatest player of all time? Does she leapfrog everybody?
She is certainly in that conversation. You have to put her in the top five for sure. I mean, I don't know if anyone.
I mean, she's already kind of right there.
Oh, sure. I mean, top two. Yeah, maybe right up there with Sandra. I don't know if anyone can take that from Sandra. You know, she is something else. But yeah, if she wins, she will easily be one of. If not, you know, up there for like the best player ever. I mean, but let's talk about that for a second. Like I have discounted Suri's chances of winning throughout this entire season because I, you know, while she's getting a good edit and theoretically it looks like she has the chance of, you know, to be having like this winner's edit type of thing. I was like, but in reality, in practice, no one's going to let her get to the end. And yet we're at the final eight. She has not gotten a single vote, if I'm not mistaken. I don't even know if she has been talked about as a target since like the first episode or two when there was the whole Ozzy Suri thing.
Mm-hmm. And that was over things that she did in Micronesia.
Right. So and she's still in the majority alliance. It looks like next week she's looking to potentially make a move, because right now I think the biggest danger for her is that if her side gets too far into power, then they're going to want to take out one of their own, and she is, you know, a likely person to be targeted as an endgame threat. So what she needs to do is stay in the majority only by one, so that they always need her vote. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because if she ever finds herself in a situation where they can spare her vote, then they're going to try to get rid of her. So if she does make a move with Ty next week, and I don't know what that would be, maybe turning on Andrea potentially, if not Michaela, then, you know, she could be now in maybe like a four-person alliance or something that takes control of this game. You know, if she's able to somehow like win an immunity challenge right at the end, we could be talking about Suri as the winner of the season.
Be very exciting. Again, I don't want to get people's hopes up. We got to get a little closer to the end before we really start to get into that. Although we only got one more week until the finale comes up.
And so what? Do we think in this next episode, it has to be like last season where two people are going home in 1 hour?
The
right?
Will and Sunday special.
Yeah. And so Will and Sunday did not get... you know, the airtime that they probably deserved in the last season. And so you have to wonder, is this the episode where we sort of chop through some of the people that haven't been getting screen time in this season either?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think that Sarah Lucina has been executing on the Will Wall pendulum strategy? Did you know that Will Wall was going to be such a pioneer and talked about for years to come with his Survivor specials?
Look, there is something there. Will's strategy was a good one if he could trust the people that he was doing it with. You know, it's sort of it's sort of the way that you played the game a little bit in the Amazon. So there is validity there if you can trust the people that you're out there with, and they do seem to trust Sarah. So yeah, it's totally possible that she can continue to swing, and just stay one step ahead of the, of, you know, being in the majority by one throughout the season.
In hindsight, I think that the biggest problem with what Will was doing was that it just sort of like got out like the PR of this is called the pendulum strategy. This is, you know, there was resume talk and it was just like, oh, this isn't just like something organic that's happening. This is part of a plan and we have to put the kibosh on that.
Right. And everyone knew that if it worked, if it was successful and he got to the end, it was his strategy, right? And so you sort of have to reward him with your jury vote if that's how he got to the end with a strategy that he coined that other people went along with.
Let's talk about one of your neighbors, and I'd love to get your take on how Ty is doing this season. Now, I'm presuming that you're friends with Ty just because you guys are both in the Bay Area,
mm-hmm.
the Love You Bay Area.
Yeah.
Yes. So what has been your take on Ty this season?
So I have been beating the Ty drum for many, many weeks now, going back to very early on in this season when he played the idol to on Sierra. You know, everybody saw that as Brad's move. Like Brad pointed at Sierra, you know, Brad, they thought it was Brad's move when Ty voted out Caleb, because they showed that conversation of Brad saying why you should vote out Caleb. And people totally from early on in this season have been discounting Ty as even able to make these strategic decisions for himself. But when you look at, you know, even in, up until this, even in this vote, he is the only one of the minority that's now been able to sort of work himself back into some semblance of power where he's voting with the majority. But Ty, on paper, has played a very strong game this season when you really think about it. He voted, and he's playing a loyal game, which I think is something that are a more loyal game than people give him credit for. I think people think that Ty is inherently like, sort of a flip-flopper, even the way I heard that, like, Aris, you and Aris were talking about him when you guys had your podcast. You know, Aris was saying, like, oh, yeah, Ty just sort of flips and flops, and he never knows what he's doing. And I think that – I don't know if that is really true because, you know, he – up until recently was on the right side of every single vote. He played an idol successfully. He found two more. He voted out Caleb so that he could solidify his allegiance to his alliance. He then plays an idol on someone is in his alliance. Like, what else does someone have to do to show that they are loyal to their alliance? I think Ty proved that early on.
Right. But then they voted against him, and then he is now flipped his allegiance and probably properly flipped his allegiance. I think that the problem comes that he has a hard time then owning that at the, you know, we saw him in a final tribal council and he was unable to really sort of take ownership over the moves he made and really give reasons why he ultimately did that. And I know that there is a language barrier there, but I feel like that that's where it ultimately comes down, that he has a hard time and maybe he's just not confrontational. But I think that where something that you did very well, be able to sort of articulate, okay, this is why I made this move against you. And I think that people appreciate that frankness often out there.
I could not agree more. I think that is the you know, that is the real knock on Ty's game, is that he's not able to articulate the reasons why he did the things that he does. But I will maintain that I think his instincts are spot on. And his, yeah, if he gets to the end, he needs to be better at explaining why he's doing the things that he's doing, and maybe even in confessional as well. And maybe that's why we're not seeing any of the rationale on the show itself, because maybe he's just not able to provide it. But I think the criticism of Ty often goes far beyond that, where people say he's, you know, such a flip-flopper, not loyal, and doesn't know what he's doing, and all these things. And I don't agree with those criticisms at all.
Do you get to hang out with Ty and Mark? Mark the human?
So I actually met Mark the human before I ever went on Survivor. So yeah. I had really met anyone for I obviously was a huge fan, but I didn't go to any of the like events or anything like that. So I had never met someone from Survivor. And about a week and a half before I was scheduled to leave for Fiji, my friend Claire sends me a text message like, hey, you know, I'm going to a watch party in San Francisco. Ty's going to, like, with Ty tonight, do you want to come? And I was like, hell yeah, I want to go. And so I went to this watch party. I met Ty. I met Shireen. I met Neil's brothers.
Yes.
Neil himself wasn't there, but I met
Wombat.
Yeah. And I was, of course, too scared to tell them that I was actually going to be on the show because, you know, they tell you not to tell anybody at all. So I didn't tell them that I was going to be on the show, but I wanted to pick their brains. And this was a relatively small watch party. There were only like 20 people there. And so I really got to talk to Shireen and I really got to talk to Ty and Mark and ask them all of the questions that I'd ever wanted to know, which was great, like, last minute prep before going on the show. And Mark is just the sweetest guy. I actually, this is funny. I made a joking alliance with Ty, because I knew he was in the mix for 34. Obviously he wouldn't admit that when I asked him as just like some random fan. But I was like, hey, Ty, like, if we ever play Survivor, like, you know, Alliance, you know, I'll never vote you out. Knowing that, like, there was a non-zero that I could actually show up on the beach and, like, surprise him out there. And he'd be like, wait, this is a returning player season. Why is this fan for my watch party here?
Yeah. You went undercover. You were like Donnie Brasco.
but yeah, no, Mark the human is so wonderful. And they are just perfect together.
Yeah. Talk to me about Brad Culpepper and, what he's been able to do this season. First off, as a super duper fan, were you psyched to see the return of Monica Culpepper?
Yeah, that was awesome. It was great to see her out there. And I have been also sort of beating the Brad drum as well since the very beginning of this season. There was a funny 115 article that came about Brad that I know you're aware of, that you know, talked about how he really wasn't a bad guy in his first season. And I was so – when I read that, it was like, yes, this is exactly what I've been saying for weeks. That and this is why Brad was my pregame winner pick, because I saw people coming into this season talk in their pregame interviews and they were all like, oh, you know, people don't really like Brad. So – but I like Brad, so I think he's going to be someone that I can work with and go to the end with and beat at the end. And there were so many people on this season that were saying that. And in my head, when I was reading those interviews, I was like, they have the wrong perception of this guy. And it's based off of what they watched in season 27, Blood vs. Water, where people are like, you know, F you, Brad Culpepper. But what did he actually do that was mean or bad or whatever besides voting people out of the game? I mean, the people that were pissed were the people that were voted out and the loved ones of the people that were voted out. That's natural. But it's different in a Blood vs. Water season. And so I always thought that by all accounts, Brad is actually a really nice guy. I've never met him or talked to him myself. But from everything that I watched on the show myself and that I've just heard, he seems like a very nice guy that is not like the person that you would expect him to be based off watching Blood vs. Water.
Do you think it's an advantage in a returning player season to sort of have an edit in your first season that does not actually match your persona? So the bigger the delta is in between your real edit and your actual personality, is that possible? That's a big advantage in the returning player season?
Huge. As long as the delta is in the direction of making you less threatening.
Yeah.
If it went the opposite way, if you are actually not that threatening, right, and you got this edit that made you seem like you're this great game player, that's not going to help you. But that certainly wasn't the case with Brad. They showed him to be a total doofus. And it doesn't seem to be the case.
Right. Like in Survivor Amazon, I got a really great edit and that did not help me.
Yeah. A total doofus. So yeah, right. And All-Stars.
Yeah. And you know, I think that there is something to that where, you know, these players, you know, that sort of like Troy Zan in One World, like came off kind of like a hothead. Sierra Dawn Thomas came off as like really nondescript. And then these players were able to capitalize on that here in this season.
Well, part of, I think, the reason why that happened is that the people that came into the season with huge threat levels didn't capitalize on the other people with huge threat levels being there, you know, or they tried to, but it never worked. They allowed these people with low threat levels that came into the season to do well because they couldn't work together as a group. If Sandra and Tony and Aubrey and Ozzy and all of these people had worked together, you know, the end game of this season would look entirely different. I think this season has always been about like the people who came into the game with a really high threat level versus the people who came in with a really low threat level. But only one of those groups saw it that way.
What about yourself in a potential winter season? Is that something that you'd be interested in doing?
Of course. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm sort of like Sandra. Like if Survivor calls me to go on Survivor, like anytime, any place, anywhere, I that's what I was saying before I ever got cast on Survivor. I don't know why I would be any different right now. I'm just as big of a fan now as I was before.
So you would play potentially with non-winners, even though the track record is not good in that scenario.
I love Survivor. If I get the chance to play Survivor, I'd be thrilled to play Survivor with whoever wants to play Survivor with me.
Were you disheartened that the winners couldn't keep it together on this season?
Yeah, I think they would have had a better shot if they had had stuck together for sure. Do I think that would have allowed them to totally be successful? No, because there weren't enough winners to actually group up. So I'm not talking just about the winners getting together. I'm talking about the people with high threat levels getting together. You know, they needed to surround themselves with more than just other winners, but they couldn't even do that.
Could we also touch on Andrea? Because I really feel like that she has played her best game this season. And I've been so impressed with her because I didn't think that she had this game in her. I really did think that she was going to come out here and struggle. I thought that a lot of people were going to be targeting her after the last time that she played. And I've been so impressed with Andrea 3.0.
Color me incredibly impressed because even... it's not just before the season where you're saying that coming into the season you thought that. For 4 weeks, I counted them up. In my power rankings, I have now put Andrea at the bottom of my power rankings 4 different times. And she not only is still in the game, but she has won immunity challenges. She's in the majority. She is running the show in many ways. It is incredibly impressive that she came into this game with a threat level that she did, that she has survived post-merge as long as she has with the threat level that she has. I mean, somehow I think her threat level is even higher than Ceri's at this point, which is a great benefit for Ceri's game. And another reason why I think she potentially has a chance to go all the way here, that she has a bit of a shield with Andrea because Andrea is such the all-around package. You know, she is a physical threat, a social threat, and a strategic threat. I kept thinking that she was going to be the next to go, the next to go, the next to go. There was this whole thing with, like, at the very beginning, there was a scene with Troyzan after he finds the idol where he is talking about how he doesn't trust Andrea. So I'm like, okay, Troyzan's going to idol out Andrea when that, you know, tribe loses a challenge. And so I put her at the bottom then. And that didn't happen. Then it's like, okay, now they're merged again. Like, Troyzan still has that idol. He's going to idol out Andrea or something, you know. And I've just been wrong, 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 wrong.
Yeah. And I'm happy to be wrong because I'm just, you know, I love Andrea and I'm just really proud of the game that she's playing. I mean, she really did everything like you're supposed to. I thought she was going to come in and be like playing too hard, too fast. She really kept it under the radar and played it very slow in the pre-merge. And, you know, she's willing to make big moves. I would have loved to have seen her and Zeke work out their differences. Yeah. But now, you know, here she is heading into the final eight. And I feel like that you got to call her one of the favorites to win.
I mean, well, she has a huge target on her back at this point. So she has a harder time. She will have a harder time, I think, getting to the end than even Ceri, because, you know, she has become very close to getting the votes. There are a number of people in the game that want her out. I mean, I thought she was going home when Zeke went home. I thought she was going home last night when Sierra went home. But I do think that at some point, and again, I would be thrilled to be wrong again, but she will probably be at the bottom of my power rankings again.
Oh, no.
Which is the good. As soon as I don't put her in the bottom spot, she's going to go home. So this is where she should want
reverse
to be.
Jinx.
Yes, the reverse jinx.
So how are the power rankings going? Who's winning?
I believe that that Gordon put Sierra at the bottom this week, and I did not. So he got 1 point on me this week. So I think I am up by 3 points, which is very close for power rankings.
Okay. Adam, I want to start to get into I have a lot of questions for you from the listeners of the podcast. And of course, let me ask you this question from Randy Nupal, who said, Adam, you previously said on RHAP that if you aren't there making friends on the island, then you're severely playing wrong. This season, with that, who is playing wrong?
Well, this, you know, was it in the preview or was it actually in this episode that Sarah said, I'm not here to make friends?
Yeah, well, that's sort of like a reality trope.
It's the reality trope, but it's the reality trope that I harp on, where I say I have said many times that if you say I'm not here to make friends, that's fine, but you're there to lose the game of Survivor, because the game is about making friends and making strong relationships so that people want to work with you and want to go to the end with you. And when you get to the end, you want them to vote for you. And if they don't like you, they're probably not going to vote for you. So I've said that many times, and yet we have now Sarah saying that. So presumably, if I'm right, Sarah is not going to do well in this game, and certainly not going to win the game, but it does look like she's set up to do much better than my make friends strategy would allow you to believe. So, you know, maybe I'm not as smart as I think I am.
But
Rob,
even if she says I'm not here to make friends, doesn't it seem like a lot of people say Sarah is my friend, that she's like my it girl out here, or yeah. Right.
Yeah, I do think, like I said, I think she's playing one of the best social games ever. And so, you know, saying that she's not here to make friends, it's not necessarily it's what she's doing. She might just be saying that as like a soundbite, but it certainly looks like she's making friends. In terms of who is not making friends, you know, I hate to say it, but it doesn't seem like people are getting along with Michaela very well. I wish that weren't the case, but she just has not seemed to be able to find her footing socially within that group. Who else? Yeah, I think that's all that we've seen in terms of who's left of people that like sort of have not been necessarily jiving socially.
Yeah. Okay, this is a question from Amy Shapiro. She wants to know, Adam, you didn't end up talking about your mom all season when you played. I'm interested in hearing your perspective on Zeke being a target because he ended up having a quote-unquote story. And yeah. Then Andrea's mom talking last night about her sister who had passed away. What does Adam think about survivors having a story at the final tribal council? And is it different for returning players? And I'd like to add, is this just too big of a talking point? Is this something that people aren't thinking about as much as it comes up maybe in talking about the show?
No, I think people do think about it when you're playing the game, but I think that they're sort of wrong to think about it because I don't think that it makes an impact. Of course, I'm biased, and people are going to, you know, continue to say for the rest of my life that I won or got votes at the final tribal council because of, you know, the story with my mom. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the evidence does not agree with that. I don't believe it at all. And I don't think that, and I said this before I ever went on Survivor. I said this in casting. I said, having a story is a perceived threat without actually giving you any benefit in the game. It's a perceived threat in the sense that people think, and probably even more so now that I've won and after Jeremy won, that if you have a story, you're going to get more votes at the end. But I don't think Jeremy won because of a story, and I certainly don't think that I won because of a story.
And I just set the record straight that I think that most people who are serious about following the show don't think either of those things.
Yeah. So that perception absolutely plays out on the beach, and I definitely think it did with Zeke. Varner totally was terrible to Zeke in his personal life, but he also screwed up Zeke's game in many ways. One of the things that sort of happened was that Zeke started to distrust his closest friends and allies. And I don't necessarily think that happens in a season where Varner does not out Zeke at Tribal Council. But you have to imagine, and I certainly don't want to speak for Zeke, but you have to imagine that if one of your so-called friends does something so vicious to you that you have to think that maybe one of your other friends is capable of turning on you as well. It probably screwed up his perceptions of who he can trust, who he can't trust, and then add on top of that no one wanted to go to the end with him because of this perceived threat of having a story. He was dead in the water in the game from the moment Varner opened his mouth.
Yeah, and I just feel like that this perception is just going to continue to build, where I wonder if just survivors are going to try to keep more and more of this stuff just like closer to the vest, where people are just sort of like going to be attempt to be like a blank slate out there because they're worried about, oh, if I talk about this, people will come for me. If I talk about this, people will try to vote me out.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think it's sort of a coincidence that's happened, that Jeremy did that, that I did that, that we happened to win. But I certainly don't think that doing that helps you win only in the sense that revealing it would hurt your chances.
Yeah. You know, it's really sort of ironic where, going back to Survivor Pearl Islands, where if Johnny Fairplay did the dead grandma lie now, he'd get voted out that episode because he'd have the best story that he got told about. Oh, he told got told about his grandmother. That's too good of a story. Can't take him to the end now. Got to vote him out. It'd be the worst move in Survivor history.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I think part of it, like, I don't know that I think part of it is also the way that you phrase the story, right? Like if you make it about Survivor, then people are going to be more threatened by that. Like if you somehow say, like, this is why I'm doing this for my family, or this is why I want to win the money for my family or whatever, then people are going to look at that as more threatening than if you just tell a story kind of that's I don't know if I'm saying this super clearly, but you kind of get what I'm saying. Like if you tell a story that's just sort of something from your life, as opposed to telling a story about why this makes Survivor so important to you.
I get that. And I think also like in the way that you talk to Jay about your mom, where you're sort of like confiding with somebody like one-on-one, as opposed to like having like some sort of like a group discussion, like at a tribal council, it does feel like it ends up being more about the game when things come up in an official game setting than as opposed to just sort of like two people talking off to the side.
Yeah, I don't know that that's exactly what I was trying to say, but I agree with that as well.
Okay. Ryan Hilliard wants to say, now that the legacy advantage is in Sarah's hands, how can she use it correctly and most effectively?
I mean, ideally, she's never going to, like, get votes anyway. But it seems I don't know that I'm going to give a really nuanced answer to this question.
Is there any way to use the legacy advantage other than just, you know, pull a Ken and just shut the hell up? Don't tell anybody about it. Just play it at six.
I mean, I guess if she wanted to, she could try to get votes on her at six, but I would be very hesitant to do that because if she's putting a target on herself at six, that target's going to stay there at five. Hmm. So, you know, I wouldn't advocate for her trying to get votes or something like that.
Yeah, because if I recall with the legacy advantage, and I'm sure you remember with Ken, do you play it before the votes or after the votes? Is it like, do you play it like an idol or like a necklace?
Like an idol. You play it after the votes have been cast.
Oh.
My question, yeah. But my question is, can you play it for somebody else?
No, I don't think so.
For yourself.
Yeah. But I think that you're onto something where if you could be sort of like the decoy vote at six, that might be interesting to sort of, you know, just nullify the votes from one side, like the person with an idol trying to get people to vote for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You just don't want to bring too much of a target on yourself so that people want to continue to come after you after that.
Yeah. Okay. Let me give you another question. And this is one, again, from Jonathan Schwartz, who wants to know, it seems impossible to use the legacy advantage in building an alliance, considering that if it favors someone else, if you get voted off, if you had the legacy advantage, would you ever tell anyone you had it? And if you did, would you lie about what kind of power it has? Is that, that's a different way to go, to sort of make up a power, like a page out of Tony's book.
Yeah. I mean, I would never say never in the game, because there may be a time where you know, let's say you were down 3-4 and you needed to flip somebody and this was the only tool you had left in your arsenal. Like, you know, you could make that argument. But generally speaking, I think this is the power that you would definitely want to keep to yourself. And certainly if you did tell anyone about it, you would want to make it very clear that, you know, if you have a hand in voting me out, obviously you are not getting this thing.
Yeah. Now, I'd be interested to know, could somebody with the legacy advantage say like, oh, this is like a Tyler Perry legacy advantage, that do you think that would production step in or not and say like, yeah, I have a thing, you can't vote me off. If you were telling people that you found a secret advantage, I mean, Tony kind of did that in Kageyan. I don't know if it's necessarily against any rules of the game.
No, it's definitely not. You can say whatever you want.
Yeah.
So yeah, she could totally say, I have this legacy advantage that gives me, you know, immunity yet for two. I don't know. She could say whatever she wants. The question is, are people going to believe it? And then, you know, if they don't believe her at all, they could just say, you know, would you mind showing it to me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Mike Boogie in the Big Brother All-Stars kind of did that with the coup d'etat where he had a, you know, he ultimately didn't end up using his power, but he really just sort of like intimidated people by how powerful it ultimately was going to be if he did use it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely, you know, I don't know that I've thought about the legacy advantage enough to really consider all the options there, but there are definitely other ways to play it that I haven't considered, I'm sure.
Okay. This is a question from Jana who wants to know, what are your thoughts on it being a group reward challenge for the family visit? If you were not chosen to go along in this circumstance, is it less likely you'd be angry at the winners because there were three of them deciding instead of just one?
Yeah, I guess.
Did you like that they did it this way?
I didn't think that they were gonna get to invite people. So I would not have wanted that in my season because it would have totally ruined the whole point of announcing it publicly that I wasn't going to use the reward steal in advance. I mean, that was genuine, but it was also timed on purpose to do it right then and there to build up as much goodwill as possible so that I could cash in on it immediately, hopefully, and someone would pick me to go with them. So if it were a team thing, that would not have been good for me in the sense that that wouldn't have worked nearly as well. But yeah, I mean, you're always going to be pissed when people don't pick you. I think a lot of it depends on who does it look like is making the decision, and we didn't really see in the edit which of the three of them kind of like were making those decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we didn't get to see if there was a huddle or anything like that.
But out there, you can tell like who's looking to who.
Yeah. Okay. Matt Stewart wants to know, Adam, what are your thoughts on players returning without a chance to see themselves play on TV? Do you think it's an advantage to have the other players blinded to you or a disadvantage by not being able to pivot? If you were in Zeke's position to come back right away, would you have gone back?
Let's put aside for the fact that
your circumstances are very different than anybody else's, obviously. Yes.
Shortly after my season, but if things were different and I didn't have everything going on in my personal life and I had been invited back, I definitely would have gone back right away, I think. Plus I would have had that pregame alliance with Ty.
Yeah.
That would have been nice. I don't know that I'm going to go one way or the other on this. It's definitely both. And I hope that doesn't feel like a cop-out answer, but it's bad in the sense that you don't have any relationships with these people, and they might think that you're more capable than you are because of the Russell Hance factor. But then it's good in the sense that there are probably other personal conflicts that are going to supersede them not knowing anything about you. So you probably right off the bat, you may not be the first target. So it gives you at least a little bit of time to maybe make some of those bonds. But I'm not going to go one way or the other and say it's great or it's bad.
You know, we talked about Michaela and how she was different from one season to the other, but I'd be interested to know if you saw anything different in, you know, playing with Zeke and then watching him on this season in terms of what he did differently.
No, not really. One of the things that I wished that Zeke and Michaela would have done more of was reach out to people from our season. And I think this is something that I might have done if I was going to go immediately back, because I know that the negative of going back so soon is that you don't get to watch yourself. You don't get to learn what other people think you did wrong. So if I were going back right away, I would have called up Zeke. I would have called up Michaela and other people and been like, what were your perceptions of how I played and how I might have been able to play a better game? And I don't know that necessarily – I mean, they certainly didn't call me. But that could have been helpful for them. Like, I would have told Zeke – the same thing kind of that I told him at Final Tribal Council, which was they asked me, like, why do you think you got there? And I was like, well, I saw Chris go out in front and he got chopped off. I saw Zeke go out in front. He got chopped off. Like, Dave, like, these guys were playing games where they wanted to be in control and making the big decisions. And that's fine at a point in the game, but at the point when they did it, it was so soon that they then became the biggest threat in the game. And unfortunately, I think Zeke did that again around the same time. He felt like he needed to make these moves when I think he would have survived at least a few more votes if he just sort of would have sat on his hands a little bit more. But mm-hmm. That is not in Zeke's nature. Zeke – it would rather go out swinging at 10 than go out with his hands tied behind his back later on in the season. And I can respect that. But it's not necessarily the best way to get yourself to the end of the game.
Yeah. And I definitely think that that's an interesting point in terms of how Zeke looks at the game. Do you feel like that that Zeke has gotten a bad rap? That I feel like that a lot of people, especially on the internet forums, like I feel like have really sort of like now painted Zeke as the face of wanting to make big moves. And I don't think that's fair.
And I'll call it out specifically because I'm a member of this community, but the Survivor subreddit is so hard on Zeke. It blows my mind. Like, they are almost cruel to him in a way that they go after just the way that he likes to play the game. I mean, I really don't understand it. Like, there are comments about Zeke on there that get upvoted to the heavens that are just like, you know, Zeke is the most annoying player ever or whatever. It's like, really? Just because he wants to make big moves? Like, is that really what we're so upset about?
But it's interesting that then the other person that was kind of a meme like that was Sierra also, and then she ended up getting voted out early. Why is that such a thing of the person that talks about wanting to make big moves? That person is sort of shot down and there's scorn towards them. Is it because that the show tries to project big moves, and then if one of the cast members sort of adopts that philosophy, that they're seen as some sort of pariah?
Yeah, I think it's the push. I think it does have to do with the pushback, like you said, of the show's narrative, that the show is always trying to push this idea that you have to make big moves in order to win. And I think the more nuanced Survivor fan understands that that's not really necessarily the case. And doesn't necessarily like that, like Prop's favorites. It's very clear that he loves Sierra. It's very clear that he loves Zeke. He loves players that say what he says, which is you have to make big moves in order to win. And so it's almost like when your sibling is sort of towing the party line of your parents, like, oh yeah, you know, just agreeing with everything your parents say, and then you can't stand your sibling because, you know, they're like kissing your parents' butt or something like that. Like, I don't know if that's a good analogy, but maybe that has something to do with it. Like, you know, but you're allowed to see the game differently, and the vitriol towards people who, you know, want to play the game with big moves, it makes the show more interesting. Why wouldn't we celebrate that?
Yeah, I can get the idea of, you know, there's too many idols, there's too many advantages, you know, the game ends up being much more luck-based where people sort of are fearful to really try to do something because of there's so many advantages and idols in the game. I can understand that point. But the idea of flipping and trying to make big moves, like, I just don't understand the counter argument of, I just wish people would just vote with their alliances more. I just wish that, you know, we could have a good old fashioned, everybody just sticks to their side, just like how it used to be. Why can't we just get back to that?
Is that what you want, Reddit? Is that what you want? You want another Redemption Island? That's what you're asking for.
We're getting downvoted right now.
Now I'm gonna get flamed.
look, we all want we like good TV, right?
We like good TV, and we
is that
like
what you want? Yeah,
the game differently. You know, I don't want to see a bunch of people who all play the game and see the game the same way. Now, would I want to be out there necessarily with someone who wants to make a big move if they're in my alliance?
Yes.
No. And that's probably why Zeke has gotten voted out in the positions that he's gotten voted out the last couple seasons. So, you know, do I agree that it's the best way to play the game? No, I don't. But do I agree that with this idea that we should, like, be so annoyed with Zeke, or even like go so far as to dislike or even hate Zeke because of the way that he chooses to play the game? That's ridiculous to me.
Yeah. It's an interesting topic. Just, I think that the idea is like sort of, you can make big moves, but you shouldn't say you like big moves. I think that that's where I think you run into trouble. And I'm not sure exactly, like, it takes a smarter person than me to figure out exactly why that is, but it seems like that's the fault line.
Will got so much flack on that for the resume talk last season. Like, yeah, it's not the best way to describe your game in the game because, you know, it's just not going to curry any favor with anybody. But, you know, the vitriol that's reserved for it, just, I find fascinating.
Okay, Shannon Gates wants to know, what are some fun stories you have from touring Australia? Hope you come back for the eventual live KI Aus.
No.
Let's Shannon. Don't put that out there that Steven and I have not booked a Australian Survivor Know-It-Alls. Not like Adam and Brett.
Could be fun. What
could
do you
be
think?
Fun. I'm sure it would be fun. But again, you know, I have all to do to get Steven around North America.
Well, maybe someone out there, one of your Australian listeners, wants to bring you out. Maybe they're going to fly you out, Rob.
Yeah, we'll franchise it out to Nick Iadanza that he can go ahead and host one for us and see how it goes.
And if you know someone wants to do that for you, Rob, of course, if you need a co-host along with Steven, here I am.
So. Okay. All right.
I had such a blast in Australia, and I met 14 of the 24 contestants from Australian Survivor, and many of them took me into their homes. It was amazing. This Survivor family goes far beyond, I think I've actually met more people from Australian Survivor now than I have from the American version of Survivor.
You've only met 14 American Survivors?
I don't think very briefly I've met a few. Like at the finale, I met Sari very briefly. I met Sandra very briefly. At the Live Know-It-Alls, I met a few people briefly. But like I went to the reality rally, and I think there were only like six people from Survivor there.
Right.
I'm going to the Hearts of Reality event in Florida in August, and I know I'm going to meet a lot more there. But I really haven't met all that many people from the American version of Survivor.
Okay, so go back to the Australian Survivor. Why do you have such a close connection with the Australian Survivor cast?
Well, first of all, I went to Australia and got to meet them. But I'm also just, you know, I'm a huge, like, I'm a little bit embarrassed to admit this, but I'm a huge reality TV fan. Like, I don't just watch the American version of Survivor. Obviously, that's my favorite, but I watch the Australian version of Survivor. I watch Big Brother Canada, so I'm going to the finale there next week.
Yeah, that's unbelievable to me that before we came on, you were telling me that you said, oh, I'm gonna be there next week. I said, oh, you're coming to LA for the Survivor finale? No, I'm going to be in Toronto next week for the Big Brother Canada finale.
Yeah, John Party was able to get me a ticket to the live finale of Big Brother Canada. I cannot get a ticket to the live finale of Survivor the season after I won. I can't get a ticket.
So you can't get into the season 34 finale, but you have a ticket for the Big Brother Canada finale.
That's correct. Yeah.
So
I'm going to try, though. I'm going to do seat fillers. I want to go. Look, my very first ever Survivor finale was last season. I think that was a great way to go for my first one.
Right.
You know,
on the stage. Yes.
It's like winning $1 million. Like, that's not bad. But I would love to go to another Survivor finale. So, yeah, I'm going to try to go. I'm going to be in L.A. If I can go, I would love to. So I might be waiting out there in line with everybody else who signs up to like be a seat filler.
Right. You're trying to be a seat filler, or maybe you could like scalp a ticket also. Maybe like a fan will say like, oh, OK, well, like I'll sit next to a Survivor winner.
my
dad plus one
listening in right now, and he's like, I want one too. Like,
yeah, it is a tough ticket to get. I know when Aris was over, that he was saying that he can't get a ticket either. Yeah, so it's
I heard him say that. So I was like, all right, well, I guess this, you know, I don't know. You just can't get a ticket.
It's a tough
sell.
It's a tough ticket, and it's an all-star season. Those are always the toughest ones to get. But I hope it works out.
not everyone gets a press pass, Rob.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I hope to see you there. I hope that we can. it'll work out for you.
Mafia game going.
Yeah, that would be good.
What was I talking about?
Yeah, well, we got to figure out a way to do it, but it would be great if we could work it out.
I love Mafia. I think I've told the story that when I was in the seventh grade, I went on a backpacking trip with like a dozen friends, and I had them play Survivor, and I was like the host, and they voted each other out, and two of them cried, and it was amazing. We also played like 30 games of Mafia on that trip.
I'm really not that good at it, to be honest. Like, I really just feel bad.
That's what the mafia would say.
No, I am really bad at it, because I just feel like to really, you know, go out and I can't commit to the lie enough for mafia.
I think you would be a great god. You would tell some great
Maybe, yeah. Maybe. I've never, I just don't know the game well enough to be the narrator, but I think that that would be fun. I think I might enjoy that more so, like being the host of it than a person who has to really, like, I more enjoy not being in the mafia.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. This is a question from Renee Warsaw, who, again, wants to, hear a little bit more about what you've been doing in the lung cancer community. What do you want people to know about lung cancer?
So, you know, what I can't remember if I said this at the beginning, but like lung cancer, I think I said lung cancer kills more men and more women than the next top three cancer killers combined. And it's just not on people's radars. And so I want people to start talking about this disease, you know, the same way that we talk about some other diseases that have had quite a bit more success in finding answers. You know, the treatments available currently for lung cancer patients are not good enough. They're just not. The answers are not totally there. And I'm certainly, if anyone's listening right now that knows someone that has lung cancer, I'm not saying across the board, right? Like there are still some things that you know, can be promising for lung cancer patients, but generally speaking, we're not there yet. And it doesn't get the funding. It doesn't get the attention. There isn't as much advocacy for it. You know, and I'm not advocating at all for decreased funding for any other cancer, any other disease. But I do think it's important to like point out, for example, that lung cancer per death gets 1/14 of the federal funding of breast cancer.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the stigma, the fact that we don't have as many lung cancer survivors that are going out there that are saying these things like, I don't want it to be me. I don't want to be the spokesperson for this disease. It should be survivors, people who have, you know, gone through it and come out the other end and are able to live long, happy, successful lives. There aren't enough of those people, and there's too much stigma associated with those people that many of them don't want to come out and speak publicly because they may have smoked.
Yes.
And they want to get chided for having done that and brought it upon themselves, you know? So, you know, it's a really tough thing. It's of course not the only cause that I care about, right? Like there are other things that I'm working on, sort of more privately. Like I volunteer for an organization called Represent Us, which is working on getting the corrosive influence of big money out of politics. And to me, that's the single most important issue that we can focus on, because as long as huge corporations and billionaires are donating millions and millions and millions of dollars to political campaigns, those will be the people that the politicians will listen to, not the average voter. And there is plenty of data to back up the fact that the average voter has a insignificant, like basically zero impact on actual policy. And so that's something that I care really deeply about. It doesn't connect as well with, you know, the reason why people would have me on a radio show or people would have me on, you know, the news is because of like the survivor stuff and what happened with my mom. Mm. So there isn't really as much of an opportunity to be a spokesperson for that. You know, so I don't want people to think that that lung cancer is the only cause that I care about, but it's the area where I am able to have the most impact right now. And it's an area that I really care about and is obviously very personal to me. Other people aren't talking about it. And so I feel a duty to sort of be a voice for the lung cancer community.
Mary Catherine Egan says, thank you for your efforts against lung cancer. I've lost two uncles to it. So I think that people are still very touched by the work that you're doing out there, Adam.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that.
Tim Connolly also wants to ask you, hey, Adam, as someone who lost his mother over the summer last year, this is going to be my first Mother's Day and our family is going to be without her. Can you talk a little bit about how you and your family have gone through this past year dealing with the grieving process and moving forward?
Yeah. So, you know, Mother's Day is coming up in 3 days. And this is not something that, I'm looking forward to, obviously. It also happens to be, and again, this just goes to further show how much this whole thing like doesn't feel real to me. Like there's so many of these coincidences and crazy stories, but I got home last year from filming Survivor on May 14th. My mom passed away on May 14th. This year, Mother's Day is on, of course,
yeah.
May 14th. And, you know, there is nothing that I can say to anyone who has experienced this kind of loss that is going to make the pain go away. It just won't.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I have been – so many people who have experienced this kind of loss have reached out to me, and I am still going through messages from the finale every day, and I'm trying to respond to a few of those messages every day. And I want to respond to every single person that reached out to me with one of these stories because it is so personal. And when people wrote to me about these things, they poured their hearts and their emotions into it. And the best thing that I think I can say to someone who is experiencing this kind of loss is that you can't control the pain. That is natural and that will happen. What you can control is your response to the challenges that come in front of you, your response to the obstacles that come in your way. And I think there's a couple ways to do that. You can sort of bury your head, let the pain wash over you and consume you. And that's understandable. That's okay. That happens. That's natural. But the way that my family has chosen to try to get through this most difficult time of our lives is by trying to raise our heads up, trying to let our pain and our loss be a reminder of all of the incredible times that we were lucky enough to have, and to allow that to inspire us to live life the way that my mom always lived, mm-hmm. which was full of life and so full of energy and joy and passion and zest and enthusiasm. I mean, she lived every single day at 100%. I mean, she was walking around the block 2 days before she passed away. A week before she passed away, she was still looking at the lineup for Bottle Rock Napa Valley because she loved music festivals and she wanted to go and listen to her favorite bands. And she still saw herself as going to that. And so when she passed away, a week later, my dad and my brother and I, we went to Bottle Rock and we celebrated her life and we danced as much as we could because that's how she lived her life and that's how she would want us to live ours as well. And so the best thing I can say is to let that person, that loss, be inspiration for you to keep moving forward, to lift your head up, fight for what you believe in, and live as fully as you possibly can, just like they would have and just like they would have wanted you to.
Yeah. That's a really great story. And I mean, you always it's so inspirational, you know, whenever you talk about your mom. And there's so many people that are out there that, you know, are dealing with this type of loss. And I'm sure it really does help a lot of people. So I appreciate you talking about these difficult subjects.
It's not easy to talk about, right? And I still, like, I've done some speaking engagements, and when I talk about some of this stuff, it still is incredibly raw. But I know that there's power in talking about it, and I know that people draw some inspiration from this story. And so if one of the ways that I can bring some more meaning to all of this craziness, to my mom getting this disease and passing away from it, if I can inspire other people to live more full lives, to help fix a problem that is you know, killing thousands and thousands of people, you know, one person every 8 minutes, if I can do some of those things, then not only do I feel like I'm helping other people, but I'm helping myself as well, because it helps me bring meaning to this craziness.
Yeah. And if you can give meaning to something that, you know, terrible that's happened, it is a great coping mechanism.
And I believe that there's a way for everybody to do that. Not everybody is lucky as I am to have the platform that I do, to be able to do speaking engagements or to go on podcasts and share the story about their loved one. But everyone has the ability to focus on the positives, on looking forward, and on making the most out of their lives.
Okay. I have one more question for you from Shayna Carroll. Has playing Survivor changed your outlook on everyday interactions? Do you meet people and consider what type of player they'd be? Do you question people's sincerity or intentions more than before? Do you find yourself using your Survivor knowledge to maneuver at work or in social situations? Do you see people as archetypes? Basically, when does your Survivor brain turn off?
Okay, this is going to sound incredibly geeky, but I think a lot of people listening to this podcast are going to relate to this. That was my reality before I went on Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
That was what I thought about all the time. You know, like, how would I play this if I were on Survivor? Like, what would this person – that was my day-to-day dreaming about going on this show. So has that happened since I've been on the show? Sure. Has it happened more than it happened before I went on the show? No, it hasn't.
Yeah. I remember I used to think about before I went on Survivor or Big Brother, I used to just like think about like, well, like every, like if I was on a reality show, like everything I would do, like I would do this if I was on a reality show, I would do this when I was on a reality show. I would be much more intentional about what I was doing with this and with that. And it's like, boy, if you could just like live your whole life like you were like actually trying to be on a, I don't mean like to like scumbag people and do be like a horrible person, but just sort of like be so conscious about every decision that you're making because you're trying to get to a goal and you're really trying to put your best self forward because you are going to be seen on television. Like that would be a hell of a way to go through life.
Yeah. Intentional decision making and being very intentional about your actions, I think is great advice, not only in the game of Survivor, but in life as well.
Yeah. Adam, so nice to chat with you, that you your enthusiasm for the show always comes through. And of course, you know, you're so inspirational when you get to talk about your experience. And I know that the listeners do appreciate that as well.
Well, I really appreciate that. And it's always, you are genuinely one of the best interviewers that, you know, I've done a number of interviews.
Oh, come on.
Serious, you find a way to just really bring the best out of people, and I'm so grateful for everything that you have brought to the Survivor community, and I don't think you get thanked just quite enough for all of that work that you do.
Yes, well, thank you very much, Adam. I really do appreciate that. I hope I get a chance to see you when you are back out in LA in a couple of weeks.
I will be there very briefly. I'm coming in on Tuesday and leaving on Thursday, or maybe Friday. But I would absolutely love to see you and chat a little bit. And I hope to see you at the finale as well.
Yes. Okay. Well, that would be a double win. That would mean that you got in and also that we got to chat. So that's very good. And we'll see if we can squeeze in that Mafia game. It's going to be tight.
If not this time, it's a little busy around the finale, so maybe there'll be a better time in the future. But it's also when a lot of people are out there. So,
and you follow all of the Big Brother US?
Yeah,
live feeds.
I do not watch live feeds, but I have watched Big Brother US since like season three. I think I have not missed a season. I've watched every season of Big Brother Canada.
I was almost on that season
Of Big Brother Canada. Oh, of three. That's right. That's right. Well, thank God that you weren't.
Why? Josh Feinberg could have been the greatest Survivor player ever.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Am I going to get hate for this? But I actually do think that Big Brother Canada is a slightly better show than Big Brother US. Is that crazy?
No, nobody defends Big Brother. Big Brother is sort of like, you know, people, I think they like individual players, but nobody defends the institution of Big Brother. Like every year Big Brother starts and the fans say, well, I hope Big Brother doesn't suck again this year, but it's like it's never been good according to this year sucked. Everybody's watching it and everyone is like, oh, let's that one sucked, that one, I wish it would be good again. But
I think they need to take a page from the Survivor playbook and cast more fans.
Yeah, that would be, I just think it's the kind of thing, it's like SNL. It's like that people always complain about it. It's not as good as it used to be, but I think it's always pretty much exactly the same.
You don't think it's changed over the years?
I mean, it certainly has changed, but I feel like that fundamentally, I think it is what it is. I think the problem is that it's gotten too long. I think that if I was going to give one criticism, I think that probably they could shave about 3 weeks off of Big Brother.
Got it. Yeah.
You know, I think it used to be about like 75 days and now it ends up being like close to 100.
Right.
So it's hard to sort of like play a big game and then not get picked off.
I'm going to get in real trouble for this one, but I've said it before and I'll say it again. Big Brother fans can be incredibly vitriolic, and I would not ever wish for anyone to go through what Big Brother fans put Big Brother players through via social media. My God.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that's a complicated issue also, which is probably like worth its own podcast. But I feel like that, you know, the Big Brother fans, you know, they really see the people 24/7. They feel like they're much more attached to those people and they see their good side and their bad side. And so people end up becoming a lot more invested. It's probably more like politics in that way, where the survivors, you know, you see them for an hour a week for the most part. And you could sort of like, that a lot of times the internet fans tend to like a lot of the same people. So it's not as bad. But, you know, I think it's more diverse in terms of who people like on Big Brother. And then people are very invested in their favorites. And then it can be much more argumentative in the fan community. And then it's like, you know, spills over to the people that are actually on social media.
Why do you have to hate the people that are trying to vote out your favorites? Like, why do we, I don't understand, why can't we just like some people and you're rooting for them, but why do you have to hate the other side? That's what I've never understood. The capacity for hate that I see on Twitter and the internet, you know, there are real people behind those things. And so you have to imagine that they have that capacity for hate in their hearts. And it's not a good look.
Yeah, it's complicated. It really is. And, you know, people get very invested in their favorites. I wonder if it has to do with that the Big Brother evictions are sort of like a binary choice where it's either, okay, are you trying to get this person out or trying to get this person out? Where the survivor vote really could be anybody. You could be much more flexible and flip things around more and more from week to week. And then you end up like more having to take sides on Big Brother.
But like the way the fans treated Netta on Big Brother Canada in this season, like just because she was playing the game and yeah, maybe she said some personal things that people didn't like, but like who hasn't? I mean, it's just like it was so crazy the way that she was like booed and whatever for what?
Yeah.
Not
Adams, such is life. They build you up just to knock you down. And Netta may have flew too close to the sun.
I guess so.
Yeah. You know, it's very tricky, this reality TV. I'm not going to let my kids grow up to be on reality TV. I'm going to keep them on the straight and narrow.
Not even Survivor?
No. They're going to go on to you're a fine example of a productive person that went on a Survivor, but I think for the most part, I think that if I keep my kids off of reality TV, I'll have done something right.
Okay.
That's the goal.
I would say go after your dreams. If you want to be on Survivor, don't let your father's naysaying hold you back.
Yeah, that'll make them want it more if I tell them no, you're forbidden. Yeah. You don't have to do things like I did. It's a sad story. Adam, well, thank you again for all your insight. Hopefully we can catch up even over Big Brother over the summer, and all the best. Do you have any links you want to tell people to check out while you're here?
I'm still running my personal campaign for lung cancer research on youcaring.com/Susie Klein. You can also donate, and I disperse that to the various lung cancer charities that I'm working with. So like the Bonnie Adario Lung Cancer Foundation, Stand Up to Cancer. If you want to donate direct to the American Lung Association, like I said, you can do that at any CVS pharmacy location at checkout or at lungforce.org. If you want to look up the organization that I was talking about to get the corrosive influence of big money out of politics, you can just Google Represent Us, or it's the website is represent.us. So I'd recommend checking that out as well. And then, of course, you know, I got to do the Cochrane.
Oh, yeah.
Twitter at Adam Scott Klein or on Instagram at Survivor Adam, which, by the way, I created years before I ever went on Survivor.
Yeah. Well, great job there. And if you want to do the Cochrane, you have to say, was this OK? Was this OK? Did I go on too much?
Are we happy with this?
Yes. 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 Okay. I would stop you if this was bad.
Okay. You said the Cochrane, too.
Yes.
That's great.
Adam, great stuff. You take care, buddy.
Thank you so much, Rob.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Adam Klein back here on the podcast. And, of course, a great job once again by Adam. All-around great guy. Love talking to him about the game and always inspiring about everything else that he's trying to do with this platform. All right, so that's going to do it for me here from Toronto, before I get to our Big Brother Canada show, what we're doing here live at the Sheraton Center. That's going to be in the wrap-ups feed, of course. The next time you'll hear me talking Survivor, I will be back in the studio with Miles Nye coming up this Saturday. So still some time to get your voicemails in. Rob has a website.com/voicemail, 323-282-RHAP for that. Of course, got to see so many of the Rob is a Podcast patrons here. Such a great community that we've built of all of these fans of Survivor and the podcast. To find out more about what we have going on there, you can always check us out. Go to robhasawebsite.com/patron, see all of the content and perks we have available for the people that want to help keep supporting these crazy podcasts. robhasawebsite.com/patron. Thanks so much to Scott St. Pierre again, a godsend, taking care of all of this stuff while we're on the road this week. So thank you, Scott. Looking forward to hearing what you have to say in the comments. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.